Ladies and gentlemen, a week's gone by, a lot's gone on, which means it's time to tune in and listen to the ramblings of a diehard sports fan with Eli Gray.
All righty there, sports fans. It's Eli and Izzy here for this week's edition, episode, whatever you want to call it, of Ramblings of a Diehard Sports Fan. Got to talk NBA, the draft that took place last week, as well as a lot of trades, coaches' movements over the past week. And Izzy, how does it feel now to be a fan of the second best team in New York?
Wow, the second best team in New York. A little bold. No, I accept that. I accept it. I knocked the initial move. I still think it's a short-term type of a thing based on the age of Pierce and Garnett. Don't get me wrong. They got better. But, yeah, they're definitely better than the Knicks. I mean, the Knicks this past offseason, if you can call it, being that it just started, have already made pretty much one boneheaded deal, and they're about to make a second one. So I don't have much to look forward to. What do you think's going to happen with your Miami Heat over the next couple of months?
So there's a lot of people talking, and I don't want to say shouting, but a lot of people saying, you know, trade Bosch and you know, do moves like that. I just don't see Bosch going anywhere unless, as we said last week, you know, it comes down to one thing and one thing only. What does LeBron want? Does LeBron want Bosch on that team or not? As long as LeBron wants Bosch to be on that team, Chris Bosch will be on there no matter who they get offered for him. And if LeBron does not want Bosch on that team, well, then it doesn't matter who they get for him because Bosch will be gone. So it really, you know, depends on what LeBron is thinking. No one knows that. He hasn't said, you know, publicly. Everyone seems to think, you know, publicly it seems like LeBron wants him on the team. So I think this team will stick together. And Riley has gone on the record and said that, you know, you don't break up winners. You let them play it out till they don't win anymore. And I mean, the trade that the Nets pulled off, I agree with you, it is a short-term deal. They're badly mortgaging their future, giving away first-round picks, you know, for the next three of the next 5 years. So you're not really going to have picks. And Garnett and Pierce, I mean, they're not – I mean, how much longer do they really have left? I don't think they've got more than 2 or 3 years left. You know, that team is – you know, you almost – you mortgage your future to win short-term, and – I don't know that it even does that. You know, Miami is the reigning champion 2 years in a row. Granted, teams in the East did give them a difficult time, but I don't think this trade bumps them up and says they're definitively better than Miami. It's not a walk in the park, as, you know, come playoff time, but it will be competitive. And the thing also, the interesting part is you're putting these players together in a situation with a head coach who's pretty much their age, no experience. Lawrence Frank, who they brought back, is the highest paid assistant in the league. So you're not just dealing with the new chemistry issues of the team as a whole, but, you know, yeah, Pierce and Garnett have played together for years already, but you have to gel them in and mix them in with the other players. And as you saw with the Celtics themselves, it took time for them to gel when they first got there, as well as the Heat when they added their teams together. So you're talking, you know, it's almost risky with the players together that the Nets are bringing together. How much of a gelling period are they going to need? If it's a year, then, you know, it's a disaster because this team isn't going to be around for that long due to the age of Garnett and Pierce.
I completely agree. Like I had said in the open, that it is a short term, and you put it perfectly by saying they've mortgaged their long-term future for at least three of the next 5 seasons. That being said, I guess that they look at guys like Pierce and Garnett and they say that these are chiseled veterans, and they believe that there shouldn't be like such a crazy issue with them molding with a guy like Williams and with Johnson and Brook Lopez and so on. I mean, you look at the Celtics, you look at a player in Rajon Rondo, and we've heard over the years, the couple of years he's been in the league, that he is a very difficult guy to be around, forget play with, but that he has a very, very, very angry sort of attitude and a giant ego, and he always wanted to sort of run that team, and yet somehow, some way, they were able to make it work, where Garnett and Pierce, you know, they, I'm not saying they kept their mouths shut, but they were able to make it work somehow. So I don't question, on paper, obviously, they should be a contender for the East. Now, again, granted, it's a short period of time, so the question is, can it really catapult them in the next year or two where they can sort of give the Heat fits? Now, let's think of it like this. What other teams in the East really have that sort of talent, I guess, together, that can possibly mesh together, that can be better? The Pacers, we know, are going to get better. We know George is just, I'm not saying he's a fraction of what he can be. I would say he's about 50 to 75% of his full potential. This guy, you know, he hasn't touched it yet. Hibbert's getting better. That team, if they sign or if they're able to get a decent, strong point guard, there's no telling what they can do in the East. And like we discussed in previous weeks, the Heat and the Pacers should be, and as of now, are the focal point as far as a rivalry in the next couple of years in the NBA or in the Atlantic Division, that being the East. As far as the Nets are right there. I mean, the Knicks in this position, the Knicks are technically in fourth. And that's assuming that the Bulls don't get a healthy Rose back. So the Knicks technically could be the number five seed right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The interesting thing is, right now, aside for, you know, putting 1 and 2 of last year, assuming that Miami doesn't get drastically worse or Indiana get drastically worse than they were last year, you have to assume that, in all likelihood, those are the 1 and 2 seeds going, you know, into the regular season for sure. So the other teams coming in are now competing to be the 3 seed and unseat those. So it to me, it's a lot to mortgage off in order to do so. I mean, the Nets, and also the thing is, you're the Nets, the Brooklyn Nets, the new team, new arena, you still have somewhat of a little bit of a honeymoon period. I don't get why they didn't just ride that out, build your team with the draft picks, smarter free agents, as opposed to bringing in old aging guys. You know, they have no other cap room to move around with. You know, you're stuck with the roster that you have. Granted, it's a very solid, good roster, but you're also having a Jason Kidd, as I mentioned, a new head coach who's got zero experience in that. Granted, you know, point guards generally tend to do well coming into the league, but he's jumping right out of the league into the head coaching spot. And now you're not going to have talent for, you know, young talent for him to mold, young talent for him to work with. It's just going to be the, you know, the, let's say 2 years in its heyday, I think, with this roster, this group. I don't think Pierce or Garnett last in their, you know, their competitive level more than 2 years. Tops is what I would say. And like you said, you know, there's other teams. The Knicks, yeah, I don't get what they're doing so far in this offseason. Bringing in Bargnani, I mean, he's a big, but he's awful for what he is. I mean, and you trade away Camby, you trade away some pieces, you know, trade away Novak and Camby for Bargnani. I mean, for what? Their issue, the Knicks' issue last season was not size. You don't need to bring in a guy who is going to be 7 feet tall and still not bang on the boards and grab the rebounds. So you're mortgaging there. You know, J.R. Smith is a free agent, although reports have him leaning towards re-signing with the Knicks, but other teams are in play for him. And his father just came out and said he hasn't made a decision yet. So the Knicks also could have taken a step back. The Bulls, as you mentioned, with Rose coming back. So it's going to be a very different landscape in the East next season to see how that plays out. And the thing that might be interesting is this could make the regular season a little more important than it normally is. You know, we know most teams normally don't give two rats about the regular season. They coast almost, a la Greg Popovich last year, beginning of the season, sending 3 of his players back to San Antonio when playing the Heat. So, you know, maybe this is good for the league and that it makes the regular season and seeding a little more important with the strong, you know, you're going to have a very strong one through five in the East. You know, the West has had that for years where the playoff teams are essentially all very strong. In the East the past few years, it's been the top three teams were solid and then a real tail off. So maybe this, you know, even if it doesn't jump the Nets up and into a championship contender right away, but it makes them definitely a legitimate contender for the East. And so that'll be good for everyone involved, and that maybe we'll get some better basketball during the regular season, more, not better, you know, the regular season is still solid basketball, but, you know, a more awareness by the players that regular season games should mean a little bit more than they have in the past few years.
Absolutely. You definitely want the better seeding. You want to have a fighting chance. You don't want to end up the number eight seed playing against the number one. It should definitely make it more serious. And to continue on your point about the Knicks and their offseason, the Bargnani move is still mind-boggling. The only thing, they're paying him more money than they'd be paying Camby and Novak. And Bargnani, who's been an absolute flop of a player, really doesn't help them in any possible way that they could need. But that's one move that I view as idiotic. I give that a grade of an F. The worst move that I see them possibly making, and this has been in talks for a while, is bringing in Elton Brand. Elton Brand is 34 with a history of injury. Elton Brand will slow down the team. Elton Brand is not an answer for the Knicks. He would essentially clog up the lane and cause issues. You cannot put guys like Brand and Stoudemire and so on, or even Chandler on the floor at the same time. It seems too clogged. It doesn't make any sense. And at the money that they were supposedly going to be paying him makes even less sense, a la Dave Checkitz, a la Isaiah Thomas. It's channeling the Knicks GMs of old, minus, of course, Donnie Walsh, who, if not for him, the Knicks wouldn't even be where they are. But it just, they're already doing stupid things. Re-signing JR to a four-year deal, as much as JR can make you scratch your head with his idiotic dribbling, his stupid fadeaway 20-foot jumpers, and when he's ice cold, he couldn't hit the side of a barn. But when the guy is on and he hits and he's hitting his shots, there is not a better pure shooter in the NBA when he's on. When the guy is on, obviously Ray Allen, Melo, certain guys you talk about, but a sixth man, a guy that comes off the bench, there is not a better sixth man, as proven by his last year winning the award. So them bringing JR 4 years, $24 million. I can't say I love it, but I can't say I hate it when you look at the other two moves or the potential secondary moves that they're going to make, hereby making the team even worse. So I'll embrace JR Smith. I'll embrace his stupidity, but I'll also embrace the amazing things that he can possibly do. And at this point, if you look at the preseason rankings, I can't see the Knicks being any better than a number four or five. It just, they're not better than the Pacers. They're not, obviously not better than the Heat. And on paper, the Nets are better. They just are. So the question is, if a healthy Rose comes back, are the Knicks better than them? And I don't believe that they're even better than the Bulls, because let's face it, Thibodeau is a defensive genius, probably the best defensive coach in the NBA. And in my opinion, they should be a number four seed. So we're looking at the Knicks as a number five going into the season. That's how I view it currently.
Yeah, I agree. We will continue our NBA offseason talk right after these messages.
Hey, it's Shy Roslyn, and I'm inviting you to visit my new shop, Pond's Edge Designs by Rosalind Brinson. My motto is fun, funky, and affordable. Wearable art for men, women, and even home decor items. All handmade in the USA, every item one of a kind. Don't be shy, stop by. PondsEdgeDesigns.net.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minutes,
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
They come from the earth, dirty, ragged. But inside is a natural sweetness that comes from being wrapped in the earth's embrace and gently caressed by the hands of loving farmers.
Whoa. This ain't no romance novel. It's just a sweet potato.
Nature's Sweet Potato, now in McCain Super Fries. McCain, it's all good.
Alrighty, we are back talking NBA free agency. It's been a crazy week after the season ended just a little under 2 weeks ago, and the draft was last Thursday. Free agency kicked into gear this week. Also on the docket, a few coaches moving. Doc Rivers going out to the LA Clippers. Clippers are going all in really on this season. And what did you think of Bill Simmons talking to Doc Rivers during the draft saying he quit on the Celtics? Do you believe Doc Rivers quit on the Celtics or not?
I believe Bill Simmons is an idiot. I'm sorry. The guy's a moron. He never played the game. There's something about him. When I see him sitting as a analyst, he's sitting next to guys like Magic and John Barry. I don't know, there's something about him, the way that he carries himself, just it really churns my stomach, like he thinks he's a know-it-all. Doc Rivers did not quit on the Celtics. Doc Rivers gave the Celtics 9 amazing seasons. The guy coached his brains out. Other than Popovich and a couple other guys in the league, you can't say that there are many better coaches than Doc Rivers. I think what Simmons said was completely asinine. I don't believe it for 1 second. I think that Simmons, being that he is obviously a Celtic fan and a fan of all things Boston sports, that he felt a little bit hurt how they basically flopped these playoffs. I wouldn't even say that they flopped. I mean, they weren't even at 100%. They weren't even at 100%. They didn't even have Rondo playing, running the point. They had nobody running the point. If you don't have a semi-decent point guard, unless you're surrounded by stars, it's where you're really going to get a ton of production. I still don't believe that they flopped. I just think they were outplayed. I don't believe that they were outcoached. Bill Simmons was way out of line with that comment.
Yeah, and the thing also is it's very tough to say he quit because the Celtics front office themselves are the ones who essentially put this into place, that they wanted to blow this up and restart. And Doc Rivers, I mean, it was also... he's been iffy. Each year it's been is he coming back to the Celtics, is he not? You know, so the Celtics do remove a little bit of that, and why keep a guy like Doc around for the rebuilding process? The Celtics, to me, are doing the smart move in rebuilding. They're stockpiling first-round draft picks. They could really retool that team and be a contender once again when the league, you know, when the East flips over in a few years. And they made a very interesting hire today with Brad Stevens taking him from Butler. You know, young guy, hot name in the coaching scene. And the interesting part to me was that no one was reporting this till the deal is done, which is mind-boggling, especially in today's day of Twitter and instant news updates and sources and everything. So Brad Stevens to the Celtics, as officially reported by the Celtics Twitter feed a few hours ago. So that's, you know, and he's leaving Butler. Apparently he had been contemplating the NBA for a while. A few teams talked him. The Celtics were the ones who got it done. So Brad Stevens jumping from college to the NBA for the Celtics. And you remember the last coach that jumped from the college ranks to the NBA for the Celtics?
Yes, I do. I remember a couple. I remember one Rick Pitino. I remember one John Calipari. What I remember is failure. And then I remember them going back to college and building very strong programs. Am I wrong?
No, you're 100% right, which makes it, you know, that doesn't necessarily say anything about Brad Stevens, you know, because, A, you know, it's a different time period. But historically, the Celtics have not had luck making those type of moves. So it is interesting that that's the way they are going. And then that leads to the question of, what do you do about Rajon Rondo? Do you keep Rondo around? Do you try to jettison him? You know, there are teams that would love to have Rondo. What would you do if you were in the Celtics' shoes?
See, it's a great question that you present, and there's so many different angles, and people will say, wait. On the one hand, you'll say, wait, how can we move a guy like Rajon Rondo, who's arguably a top 3-point guard in the league when it comes to passing the rock? Shooting, it's a completely different story. But when it comes to passing and dishing, I mean, the guy could potentially have 15 assists a night, and he proved it for a long time that he is an amazing distributor of the basketball. That being said, you look at the other side and they say, wait, the guy has a history of issues with his coach, with, by the way, mind you, a player's coach, Rivers, who never has issues with anybody. Doc Rivers as an amazing player's coach, and he had issues with Rondo. Rondo had issues, they say, with Arnett, with Pierce. So I'm more of, I guess, from that side, where I know he's extremely talented, I know he's a solid player. But if you can get, whether it's decent draft picks or something decent in return, too, I feel like you have to jettison him. I feel like you have to get rid of him, because if the guy had issues with Doc Rivers and you're bringing in this rookie coach out of Butler, mind you, Brad Stevens, I mean, this guy has made an amazing leap from college. I mean, the guy took Gordon Hayward and Butler, I remember that year, to the Final Four. He is a very, very good college coach. But as you pointed out previously, guys like Rick Pitino and John Calipari, who had long college success, came into the league with Boston and flopped completely. So I just feel like Rondo won't even respect him. Because when we look at, there was the question, obviously, of Jason Kidd, you know, right out of retirement, he's going to go and coach. And some people were saying, yeah, well, he's a player, he's the same age, why would they respect him? Maybe they'll respect him because he played the point guard, he was one of the greatest at his position, and he has all those years of NBA experience. A guy like Brad Stevens doesn't have any NBA experience, so I just feel like a guy like Rondo just won't even respect him.
Yeah, no, that's going to be the interesting thing to follow, what Rondo does. But the Clippers, holy crap, they're really stocking up, and they could, I mean, you know, the Spurs obviously probably going to be the favorite in the West as well, you know, coming off the championship. But you're going to have a healthy Westbrook back for OKC. You've got the Clippers now. I think the Clippers are a legitimate number 3 in the West in the NBA. So you've got that stack there. The Houston Rockets are really trying to step it up and bring in Dwight Howard. It looks like there's a chance he goes there. They've got a very solid team. They'll have a team of, you know, Howard, a solid team with Harden, you know, or Morey making great moves, you know, Asik and Lin on that team, but they'll probably get jettisoned if they get Howard, but they could be, you know, real top contenders. So the West, always consistent year in and year out, usually is getting better and better and better.
They are definitely getting better and better. They can, and they will. I just, the whole thing with Dwight Howard, it comes back to not his physical capabilities, because you and I and all people that understand what talent is in the NBA know that Dwight Howard has the potential to be arguably the best center in the league. We don't question his physical traits. We question his mental status. Is it better for him to go to a small market team? And you had mentioned this last week in regards to him possibly going to the Hawks, where it's a smaller market. He can be the number one player. He won't get harassed. He won't have to deal with all those issues of playing in a big market team. Houston is not a tiny small market team, but it's not a giant market team. So I do believe he would be a good fit there. As far as going to Dallas, I'm going to tell you right now, I think it would be a horrible move for him to end up in Dallas for one very simple reason, and I will say the name. The name is Mark Cuban. It just won't work. If Howard doesn't show up a couple of games, Cuban is the first guy to open his mouth. He'll be right in the front. He'll be talking junk. He's proven he can do something like that. The only guy I would say worse than him would be a guy like Gilbert, but it's obvious that Howard's not going to the Cavaliers. I just feel like there's a certain mental aspect that you have to look at when looking at Dwight Howard, and you have to factor that in more so than just the talent itself.
No, yeah, it's and the thing is, you know, did you see the Lakers look really out of this. You know, it doesn't seem like, and I think rightfully so, he's shading away from the Lakers, but you never know. But Kobe Bryant telling him in his meeting, the report coming out, Kobe telling him, "I'll teach you how to be a champion." I guarantee you that did not sit well with Dwight Howard.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Just like complete disrespect. But then again, you look at it and you look at a guy like Kobe Bryant, and if anybody can look in your face and tell you how it is, who is the more respected player? Obviously LeBron coming off a couple of championships. But look at Kobe Bryant. Look what he's accomplished. So obviously Howard's weak personality took a hit, his weak ego. But I don't see him going back to the Lakers. I just don't see it happening. I really don't see him ending up there. If he ends up in Houston, good. If he ends up in Dallas, I'd have mercy on the Mavericks. At the end of the day, whoever's going to get him better have a damn good Ron Artest caliber-esque psychologist to sit there with him and knock it into his head that he must focus on the game and a good work ethic instead of being all about the media and the stupidity that comes with it. I feel like he needs moxie. He lacks that.
Yeah, and the stupidest part is, if he would get all that junk away, he's by and large a top three player in the league, not just at his position, but overall he just jumps into that upper echelon of great players in the league today. And, you know, all this other stuff, I mean, he had a pretty bad season for him, and he still had pretty solid numbers for a center. So, you know, that's the most frustrating part when watching all the hoopla and coverage with Howard on what he's doing. It's that he's got it. Like, he has the talent, he's got the size in a league that's really lacking a true, you know, like we've mentioned before, the only real true center now that I can think of on the top of my head is Roy Hibbert and Josh, you know, and Howard. But if Dwight Howard is not, you know, and either both of them still need to get a little bit of, you know, their moxie, like you said. Hibbert is starting to get it, but they're not playing to the capability of being a true center. And that's the frustrating part of Dwight Howard, is that if he would play up to and get rid of all this nonsense, he's a great, phenomenal, excellent player, but all this other stuff is dragging him down, and you're just like, what the heck is going on? And rightfully so, teams are chasing after him because everyone thinks they're going to be that one place, one organization, they've got that one player, you know, person to get a hold of him. And, you know, there's no reason for teams not to chase after him, but he really needs to get it together. And you know, there cannot be any talk after wherever he makes this decision to sign of where he wants to go or trade talks or anything like that. He's got to make a firm decision on some place, go there, shut up, and play.
Exactly. Could not have put any better. He needs to shut his mouth. And he needs to play the game. And there's one quick thing I really wish. You hear about Hakeem Olajuwon taking Stoudemire under his wing last year. And that, not obviously for moxie or for character purposes, but just to sort of chisel his game and fashion his game a certain way. I wish a guy like Shaq, I know him and Howard have bad history. I just wish a guy like Shaq would sit down Howard in front of him in a chair and verbally just punch him in his face and in his gut.
Well, I don't think Shaq is the right person. Shaq's not the right person to do that, because Shaq's been the same exact way on every, you know, we laugh it off because Shaq is huge and lovable, but Shaq, if you remember,
but he played amazingly, but Shaquille gave you his all. Shaquille was an unbelievable player. He was arguably one of the greatest centers of all time, and even with the garbage and the diva crap, he still performed. So, that being said, I agree with you. Of course, his character came into question, but you never saw him talking junk all the time, and if he did talk junk, he performed. Shaquille O'Neal performed. Howard is not performing up to his potential. Shaquille reached his peak as far as performance. You can't disagree with that.
No, I absolutely agree with you, but I think that part of what the reason that Howard isn't performing at his peak is because he's so worried about all that other stuff. You need to get somebody to smack him upside the head and get all that other stuff away. Some team should bring – whatever team brings him in, here's a crazy idea. Go hire Patrick Ewing as your assistant coach. I mean, you've got a Hall of Fame center out there who's desperate to be in the league and coach. And, you know, he's upset that he hasn't gotten head coaching jobs. He's been assistant for a while. He was, you know, the assistant in Orlando. I don't remember if there's any bad blow with them. But bring a Hall of Fame center in there with you and let him that be. Give a, bring somebody like that in on your staff and give him one role and one role only. Your job is Dwight Howard. Get it through Howard's head. Somebody's got to do that. And you mentioned our test earlier. I believe you mentioned our test earlier. If not, I'm mentioning it now. I was just watching a very interesting interview with Steven Jackson, Dan Lebatard, on Dan Lebatard, Highly Questionable on ESPN, was interviewing Steven Jackson. And Steven Jackson told over a very, very funny story in that he said, after the Malice in the Palace, which, you know, to me seems like yesterday, but oh my God, it was ages ago. But after the Malice in the Palace, they all went back. You know, they're still hyped up on adrenaline. You know, they just knocked out fans. And A, Steven Jackson said he felt, you know, he said he regrets it just because he got fined. But he felt good after so many years of hearing fans say all the crap, being able to just level them. But they're back in the locker room, and they're sitting around. And Ron Artest turns to Steven Jackson and says, hey, Steven, do you think we're going to get in trouble for this? And Steven Jackson said, he said his mouth almost hit the floor. And like, you know, he turned to him, he said, trouble? That ain't trouble. You're lucky we still have jobs. You know, like.
Just, you're lucky not getting more.
Right.
Oh,
such
my
a different
God,
world.
Ronald.
I mean, like.
And where did Ron Artest go to school, my man? He went to St. John's, baby. He's a New York product. Enough said. Does that not give you an idea as to his character, what kind of a guy he is? Has there ever been, other than Rodman, as far as questionable, like, mental status? I mean, Artest is, I don't know how to best describe him, like an enforcer, but like psychotic. I feel like he's the kind of guy that players didn't want to piss off because he would just turn and throw a punch. You know, all the Malice in the Palace, which, as you said, seems like yesterday, but we're talking 10 years ago at least. I mean, this happened when, in 2004? This had to have happened close to then, 2005, something like that.
It's crazy that, you know, and did you see Dennis Rodman thinks he should get the Nobel Peace Prize? You know, it's...
Jesus Christ. The only way he deserves a Nobel Peace Prize is if he flies out to Kim Jong out there to his son, and he wears like a wedding dress, and he asks him to propose to him for some stupidity. Dennis Rodman, please, man. Such an amazing player. You were the greatest hustler in the history of basketball. Why would you continuously taint your image? I don't know. I feel like he's reached the pinnacle of stupidity. It just doesn't get much worse than him calling the head of that country a good guy. I'm sure you read the interviews.
Oh, of course. I mean, he's Dennis Rodman's an idiot, you know, and it's like you said, it's good. And the scary part is, do you think for a second that Ron Artest / Meta World Peace is not going to try doing the same exact thing when he's out of basketball? He's going to become this public disgrace of a person trying to do things that are just stupid. I mean, you've got some of these players that somebody needs to just, like you said earlier, almost like with Dwight Howard, just go smack him upside the head and stop doing this. Just like, you know, stop doing it. Get yourself out of the public like this. You sound like an utter fool, but, you know, no one's going to do it because it makes for great stories. It makes for great media for us to be able to sit back and laugh at him. And it's scary almost to see these situations because he truly believes, and at points he truly believed that Kim Jong-un was a good, you know, Il was a good person and really would listen to him. I mean, the delusion that takes, the delusions of grandeur on Rahman's part is, oh my God, it's scary to watch.
Guess what? You make a good point. What will Ron Artest do? Guess what? Maybe he'll end up with like having a sit-down lunch with Ahmadinejad and walk in with an Israeli flag, you know, wrapped around his ass and like ask him for peace. Like, we have no idea. These guys are so off the wall. I mean, there isn't a strong enough drug. I mean, you got to load them up on Halidol, like these antipsychotics. I can't think of a crazier guy in sports than Ron Artest. I mean, after the championship a couple of years ago, I remember him on live television. He said, "I'd like to thank my therapist."
Thank my strong, yeah.
Norman, what kind of nut job goes on national television? Millions and millions of people are watching. "I'd like to thank my therapist." Like, do you want people, like people who don't even know you're crazy, to know you're crazy? So now you just told the world you're a nut job. Yeah. Ron Artest is Dennis Rodman, the version 2.0, minus the makeup and the wedding dress.
I can see it happening. I mean, it wouldn't put it past me if all of a sudden Ron Artest shows up and, you know, pulls a Dennis Rodman 2 with a wedding dress. I mean, he'll probably top him and do something even crazier, which I don't even know what it is. It'll make, you know, I can see Ron Artest doing something that makes us say, "Huh, what Dennis Rodman did was almost sane."
It's very possible. The question is, can it really get much worse than showing up in a dress, you know, wrapped in makeup? And so I honestly, I'm trying to think of it.
You always know when we say, can it get much worse, you know what happens right after that.
Right, you're right. He's going to end up in the middle of an NBA game with a dog, and he's going to marry it. He's going to figure something out. He's definitely going to – it's going to involve an animal. It has to. I just don't think that there's anything else that he can possibly do. And that being said, I'm happy that this New York native never played for the Knicks, and over the years it was discussed many times about bringing him here. And even Rodman was, you know, he it's just – it's amazing how he has not ended up in a Knick uniform, and I pray – he never shows up in a Knick uniform.
Yeah, that is true. We got a lot more to discuss. We will take a quick break and be right back.
Is anyone out there? This is the Nathaniel County Sheriff's Office. Is anyone out there? We were surrounded by the dead. They were in rioters.
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Boldly you patrol the line between order and anarchy, armed with only your wits, your resolve, and your tiny cardboard sign stapled to a stick.
Actually, I glued it on.
You protect professional golfers from what they fear most. Idle chit-chat 200 yards away.
Stop breathing so loud now.
Because you know there's one thing this spectator sport could really do without. Spectators.
Get them out.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Sultan of the Shush. We'll keep singing your praises as long as you keep telling us to shut up.
Mr. Carlson, my quiet sign on the road.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Black is back, and only at Quiznos. It's the Black Angus on Rosemary Parmesan. Quality, thick sliced Black Angus steak topped with melted mozzarella and cheddar. Try it. You're gonna like it. Quiznos. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. Toasty.
How do you make a tasty sub? There's the Quiznos way, and there's Wrong Way.
Hello.
Quiznos uses meat sliced fresh daily. Wrong Way uses shingle-packed meats in a bag. Quiznos uses bread made especially for toasting. At Wrong Way. And now, fresh out of the Quiznos oven, is our new peppercorn parmesan turkey with bacon sub. Only $3.49 for a... what the? For a limited time only at Quiznos. Mm-mm-mm.
Alrighty, we are back. I think we got a lot of NBA talk out of the way, but let's shift over to baseball kicking up in the gear. We're almost at the All-Star break. That brings up the discussion of Mr. Pug, the new LA Dodgers phenom, and a lot of people saying that maybe he should make the All-Star break. Papelbon saying absolutely not. Do you think he's done enough so far? I mean, he's had crazy, crazy season so far, but it's only been 28 games. That's the thing. It's almost half of the games of the first half. You know, he came up, he put the Dodgers back into contention. I mean, he's batting 440 with an on-base percentage of 466, 743 slugging, OPS of 1.209, 8 home runs, doubles, triples, bunch of RBIs. I mean, maybe it's only half the games that other players have played, but holy crap.
Holy crap is the best way to describe it. I know what Papelbon said, and as a purist, you kind of say, wait, you want to see more, you want to see more. You know, this guy's a phenom. He's played amazingly through half of the first half, but, I mean, like you said, look at the numbers. It's ridiculous. The guy's had more three-hit games in his first, like in the beginning of his career, than almost anybody else in the history of baseball. What else is there to say? I mean, when it comes to baseball in the All-Star game, you want to see guys like that. A guy like Yasiel Puig would put people in the seats. Obviously, people are going to watch the game regardless. But this guy is like, I mean, this guy's Jonas Espinosa on crack. I mean, this guy is ridiculous. He's built like Bo Jackson. He swings. When this guy hits a ball to right field, have you had a chance to see him hit?
I have not had a chance to see him hit yet. I mean, I've seen clips, obviously, but I haven't watched a Dodgers game live yet, but the clips are just, it's incredible what he's doing.
The guy's hitting, he's hitting like a la Mike Stanton. I mean, the power is ridiculous. The guy is literally doing everything. He's for his size, the guy is literally on fire on the bases. He's able to run. He's a little, I guess you could say, rusty defensively. I watched a couple of Dodger games I like to watch, you know, on MLB Network. They usually have those 10 p.m. games. You get to watch them or the Giants. But Puig, dude, I would love to see him in the All-Star game just to see what he can do. But I definitely understand Papelbon's point and his point of, well, look at the veterans, guys that are here 8 to 10 years, and they've had to do so much to get here and so on. But let's face it, has there been a more exciting hitter? Well, we can look at a guy like Bryce Harper, but even Bryce Harper wasn't hitting at this rate. I mean, there hasn't been anybody doing what he's done. And there hasn't, by the way, been one mention of the magical word, roids. Haven't heard anything about roids yet. So that being said, I want to enjoy it for what it is, and if I could see a guy like Puig in the All-Star game, that would definitely be awesome. I just want to interject one thing. Did you have a chance to watch the Homer Bailey game? I can happily say that I watched it from the first inning on, and, dude, the guy was ridiculous. I'm sure you saw the highlights, but the guy was throwing 97 miles an hour. I do not recall Bailey hitting 97 in any starts I had ever seen him pitch before.
And here's the crazy part, and, you know, he went off on a reporter after the game, and I think rightfully so. A reporter asked him about the walk, if he was, you know, what he thought about it and was intentionally. The dude just pitched a no-hitter. You really got to ask him about that one walk? I mean, seriously, are people that stupid and callous? He threw a no-hitter. Let it be. It was a walk, you know. It seemed, you know, I don't even know what the reporter was trying to do. Why are you that stupid that you got to mention that one walk? And rightfully so, Homer Bailey went off on him and basically told him so.
He should, as well he should. You're right. And why the hell would you, just to, like, screw with him, I guess, to talk about a walk? The walk was a walk. It is what it is. It wasn't intentional. The pitch was off the plate. And we all saw it. But the guy was ridiculous. The guy's thrown the last two no-hitters in the majors. I mean, the guy's been unbelievable. Last night, the guy was throwing ridiculous. His location was insane. He was getting them. He was catching them swinging at high fastballs. When he got Pablo Sandoval to strike out later on, I believe it was the seventh or eighth inning, the pitch was at his face, and he got him to swing. When you're throwing that well and that hard, it doesn't matter where you're even throwing the ball. They're going to swing at it because they think you're dealing so good that they're not going to get anything better to hit. Bailey threw an unbelievable game, and for that reporter to call him out like that or to even mention that is just another, I guess, a knock on the media for being jerks.
Now, here's the question. You know, does a guy like Matt Harvey make the All-Star team? Does a guy like even the Marlins have a pitcher that no one, you know, most baseball and rightfully so aren't paying any sort of attention to the Marlins, although they've been decent lately. You know, there is a lot of young talent there that's playing. I'm not having any delusions that they're going to be anything better than, you know, hopefully knocking the Mets out of fourth place. But a lot of young talent. You've got Jose Fernandez, the pitcher for the Marlins, who's been pitching light out and under the radar. So his stat line is definitely all-star worthy. It'll be interesting to see if he makes it. He, you know, his record is not, you know, is 5-4, mediocre, but that's because he's pitching for a bad team. But he's got a 92 innings pitch, a 2.72 ERA. Batters are hitting a 1.93 against him, a whip of 1.06. So, I mean, it's just crazy. You know, some of these rookies, you know, the argument that players that have been around longer, well, no, some rookies have come in and have played to an all-star level. They absolutely should be put on the team. I think Matt Harvey should also make the all-star roster. He's been pitching lights out. He's a great player. And the fact that his win-loss record doesn't line up with that shouldn't really make much of a difference.
Well, we've definitely discussed this, and this has been a topic of baseball for many years. And I agree with you completely on the win-loss record. To me, the win-loss record is a fraction of what you should be looked at as the pitcher. The ERA, to me, is the most important statistic. Then, of course, you look at the whip as far as base runners per nine innings. Those are obviously very important statistics. Fernandez, I have followed him, but I do have a fantasy baseball league. I have watched him. It's sad, though, that he can't get a lot of run production. The 5-4 record is not indicative of how he's performed otherwise. Will he make the All-Star team? I honestly doubt he's going to get in. Whether he's voted in or not is a different story. But Matt Harvey, I'm going to tell you right now, and you can hold me to this, and I'm on record, Matt Harvey will start the All-Star game in Citi Field pending one thing. The only issue is that the Sunday prior to the All-Star game, he is scheduled to pitch. And by Major League Baseball rules, that would make him ineligible to pitch in the All-Star game. So as far as I understand, and this was discussed last night with the Reds and the Giants, Bruce Bochy was asked, what do you think of Matt Harvey possibly starting? And he said, I need to talk with the Mets to see what we can do about tinkering his potential start that Sunday. But I believe, and this is, quote, his words, that Matt Harvey has done enough, forget to play in the All-Star game, but to start in his city. So, yes, Matt Harvey, ridiculous. I've watched him pitch. He's been unbelievable. Have you had a chance to watch a live game?
Yes, I have, and he really is lights out. It's almost a shame that he stuck playing for the Mets because, I mean, granted, as far as people seeing him, I don't mean that even necessarily, you know, some great pitchers will be stuck pitching for a loser, you know, like, you know, Felix Hernandez has been for the Mariners for years. You know, they were a bottom seller, but, you know, people knew who he was, you know, so that as far as that aspect goes, the, you know, I don't feel as bad because people are getting to see him. People who are even, you know, average baseball fans know that he's a name out there that you're going to look and try to watch him pitch. But a guy like Jose Fernandez on the Marlins, who's pitching, you know, lights out, no one's watching. That's where, you know, it's a shame that he's playing for the Marlins. But, you know, Harvey, it'd be great to see him start the All-Star game, especially since it's at their, you know, in Citi Field. But it'll be a very, like you mentioned, it'll be a very interesting decision for Bruce Bochy to make, especially with the consideration that the Mets have to give. And it's the All-Star voting itself, I never really liked the fan voting. The fan voting it never puts in the right players because too many people have the popularity and players that really deserve it get screwed out of it. You have players who really shouldn't be there, who end up making it when they shouldn't. And there needs to be a change overall to the way All-Star players are selected in general.
It's sad. I agree with you on that. It's sad because the average fan isn't that knowledgeable, and guys that deserve to go do not get in because of that. I agree with you. I don't like the All-Star selection system. I wish it was something that was done slightly differently. I'm not sure how it can really be altered. But especially, I mean, this proves your point with a guy like Jose Fernandez, who's pitched brilliantly in Miami, and let's be honest, he's not going to garner votes in Los Angeles. He's not garnering votes in Minnesota. He's not getting anything of that. Nobody's going to care because who the hell is Jose Fernandez unless you're a fantasy baseball junkie or you follow the Miami Marlins. So teams like the Yankees, teams like the Boston Red Sox, you know, even teams like the Tigers, I mean, they're going to garner more votes because of their bigger market status. That I completely agree with you. It's unfortunate that that's the way that it is. So you're going to see guys that don't necessarily belong there, while guys that do are left to, I don't know, get, I guess, selected and later by the manager and hope to even come in and pitch maybe for a batter. It just, the All-Star game in general, I still to this day, I don't like what Selig did. I don't like that they made it a relevant sort of a game, more relevant because, well, the winner now has, you know, home field advantage for the World Series. That's stupid. One thing has nothing to do with the other. I understand their premise. I understand why they did it, because they wanted to make it more relevant. But at the same time, it's not going to change anything. They're still going to play the game as hard as they can. They're still going to throw as hard as they can. They're going to try to hit as hard as they can because they're trying to appease the fan. So throwing that on there doesn't make it any more serious other than for the actual game. But it doesn't – I really did not like that.
No, and here's what will be fascinating to watch also is how does Jim Leland deal with Mariano Rivera? His last year, where do you pitch him? Do you hold him out and hope for a save opportunity? But then on the flip side, if it doesn't come to it, he doesn't pitch. You got to pitch Mariano in his last year.
Yeah, that's a great question that you present. And I'm going to tell you right now, and people can call me nuts. People can call me crazy. But here's the fact. The fact is, I believe, like I told you before, Matt Harvey is going to start for the National League team. Why not throw Mariano out there for the first inning? Why not? The guy's an unbelievable pitcher. It's not like he's susceptible to giving up bombs. It's not like he's going to get rocked. Bring him in for that first inning. Let there be two New York pitchers face off against each other in the last All-Star game. Because like you said, and you hit it on the head, there is no guarantee there's even going to be a save opportunity. So why do that? Bring him in early. Let him showcase his stuff. Then he can chill on the bench and watch the game from there. That's my belief.
Because that's not what you don't switch what the player is. If Mariano Rivera is a starter, he doesn't necessarily make the All-Star team. So it doesn't seem right to me to do that, to switch what he is as a player. Let's be honest, Mariano is making the All-Star game because of what a great closer he is, and you know, to put him in as a starter, that's not what he's in the All-Star game for.
No, I agree. I agree with what he's paid to do. I completely agree with you on that end. But I'm going to go back to an All-Star game situation, and it's not really comparable. But there was a situation where Cal Ripken Jr. and Alex Rodriguez, I'm not sure on the year, this is well over obviously 10 years ago before Cal retired, but there was a situation where I believe Cal was at third and A-Rod was at short, and A-Rod switched over and told him, no, Cal, you'll play shortstop. Like, why are you playing third base? It's your game. It's your last game. I want you to play that position. They asked the manager. Manager said, fine. Now, granted, that's not even comparable to bringing in a closer to start a game. But, again, where else can you really pitch him? Where are you going to pitch Rivera? Are you going to throw him in the middle innings? Who cares? It's either he's going to start or you have to pitch him in a closer role. You're not going to throw him in there if it's – I mean, most All-Star games aren't blowouts, but you're not going to throw him in there in a meaningless situation. Why not give him an opportunity to pitch? And let's face it, there have been closers that have pitched middle innings. It's not like closers haven't pitched middle innings. It's a question of will they let him start. And you make a valid point that it's not his job, it's not why he's there, but it's his last All-Star game, and he's been the greatest closer in the history of Major League Baseball. I think it should get some type of courtesy. That's the way I view it.
Yeah, it's and especially in a situation where the All-Star game stupidly means something, you know, where it means the difference between home field and not home field for the team that comes out of that division, that league, you know, the home field advantage is decided by the winner. So you really do have to throw out some sort of strategy. Mariano, and even if you use Mariano in anything other than that also, that's part of the problem. If you use him in anything other than the closer role, that's not what he is. So, I mean, it's, you never, you know, maybe in a hold situation, but, you know, you got to almost bank on hope, you know, giving your team a situation where you can play him in the ninth or in a close situation, but he's got to pitch at some point. And Harvey starting, I mean, how will that sit with the other players who are on legit, you know, real contenders that are pitching lights out? I mean, I don't know that you could justify starting Matt Harvey. He definitely needs to pitch in Citi Field, but he's
been
great
the best
pitcher.
I'm not even basing it on, obviously, the fact that it's in Citi Field gives it that more of that kick. But let's look at the numbers. Has there been a better pitcher than Matt Harvey? I mean, Corbin's been great. Lately, he hasn't gotten any W's. I think he's on a 3 or 4 game non-winning streak. Corbin hasn't been as good as him. Has there been a better pitcher than Jordan Zimmermann? Is having a great year as well. I believe he's 12-3, something like that. Whether it's 10-3 or 12-3, but look overall at the scope of things. Look at what Matt Harvey's done. Look at everything in general. Look at the numbers. I don't see a better National League starter than Matt Harvey right now. I don't.
Yeah, you know what? You're probably right. And you know, it's almost as if that's the case, if Bochy calls him up and says, I'm going to start him. And the interesting part is he did pick. Bochy picked the Mets coach is going to be. Collins is going to be on there. So it's not like they even have to discuss it. Collins is going to be on his staff to be right there to make the decision. Maybe Collins should, you know, even if he is scheduled, you know, skip a start. What that? I mean, you know, in all honesty, if that's what it can take to get a guy like Harvey, you know, it's better off for the organization as a whole to have him start in the All-Star game. I think it's better off for him as a player, for him to get that experience in an All-Star game, and, you know, skip a start of his. I mean, you know, it's not going to make the difference in your team in the grand scheme of things. Heck, it won't even make a difference in the win-loss column because, hell, you're giving him one less loss in the loss column in all likelihood. So, you know, give Matt Harvey a chance to start and maybe sit him. And I really will – it'll be interesting to see how they face it. As I mentioned, Collins is on that staff with Bruce Bochy.
We'll see. You're right. We're just going to have to see what's going to happen. And it's a meaningless game. Let's be honest. The Mets are just not contenders. Granted, they do have Harvey, but Harvey's one player. I feel like it's a no-brainer to start. The opportunity to start in your rookie season, having pitched the best in baseball, arguably, to start in your home, on your home team's field, when the team needs a boost. I mean, it's the Mets. The Mets are the Mets. They've just been a joke the last, you know, number of years. It's something that means so much to the city and so much to the team. I believe it's a no-brainer, and I am confident, I am 100% confident that Matt Harvey will start that game.
All righty. As we wrap up, Izzy, thank you for joining us this week. We will be back next Wednesday at the same time slot, 10:30 to 11:30 p.m. Hope you all join in. Guest call number, as always, is 347-637-2306. We'll leave off with one interesting thought in that Albert Pujols faced the Cardinals for the first time last night. Pujols, since moving out to the Angels, .273 average, .336 and .486 on-base percentage and OPS. Cardinals first baseman since the move, .294, .347, .479, a little bit even better. So it's interesting how that move turned out. Thank you all for tuning in. Join us next week on Ramblings of a Diehard Sports Fan. Have a good night, everyone.